call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. No
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast. The realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. We keeping it real, we staying real, and we holding it down, and it's going down, always in the South. I am your host, Joseph Ward, the realest ever, and you know how we do, man. I got to tell you the truth, and I like to talk about sports, and I got tired of the way white media was covering black athletes. And, you know, predominantly black sporting events putting their white perspective on it. So I said, hey, we got all this technology and this equipment. Let's tell our own damn stories. So here we are with the Fix Sports Podcast. And thank y'all for tuning in, locking in, and rocking with me and my craziness. But remember, there is a method to this madness. I ain't just crazy for no reason. Method to the madness. Before we get into what we got going on for today, because it's been a crazy week, it's been a lot that's going on. You know, we got to do some housekeeping. So, the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants, where African history is delivered directly at your fingertips on your phones, your smartphones, your tablets, your smart boards in the computer classroom, and in the classrooms. Through the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the YouTube series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app that's available for Android and Google Play Store, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, and now the On the Shoulders of Giants podcast, which is right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. So make sure you get up and get down on the Shoulders of Giants and visit the website at www.ontheshoulders1.com. You know what I'm saying? African history at your fingertips. And it is Black History Month. So real quick, little black history nugget. A lot of people out there saying, I see a lot of these extra, I'm more blacker than you people. We're trying to tell others not to celebrate Black History Month because this is something that the white man gave us. Well, Black History Month was created by Dr. Carter G. Woodson in an attempt to give black people the space and time for us to learn about ourselves. Now, whether you choose to take advantage of that or not, it's up to you. But just know that the white man didn't give us nothing. This is what we created for ourselves. Dr. Carter G. Woodson created Black History Week, which eventually became Black History Month, for us to learn about ourselves. And also for us to not just wait on February to learn about ourselves, 365 days out of the year. So get up, get out, and get something. So let me give you a little rundown on what we got, because we got quite a bit today. So I'll give you a little rundown. So our HBCU spotlight will be shined on the matchup between Morehouse and Clark Atlanta, which ended in a triple overtime thriller. Michael Jordan donates $7 million to open up clinics in low-income areas. Talk about these NBA trades, the fall-in, the fallouts of them. The Cleveland Cavaliers have a new team since the trade deadlines. Michael Smith host of ESPN Sports Center goes off about what happened with Jemele Hill leaving Sports Center. Give you a little recap of National Signing Day. Did Bill Belichick make bad decisions that cost the Patriots the Super Bowl? I think so. Jimmy Garoppolo gets paid for doing the same thing that Colin Kaepernick did to end the season with the San Francisco 49ers. Kaepernick got cut, never got a job again. Jimmy Garoppolo got the richest contract in history if you're talking about money per year. White folk riot after the Super Bowl again. And we're going to break down why they do that and talk about them. So that's my pre-rant rant. And then my weekly rant is going to Josh McDaniels because he has confirmed that he truly is a fuckboy. So without further notice, let's go ahead and get into it. So our HBCU spotlight, like I said, it goes to the matchup between Morehouse College and Clark Atlanta, right? So any college basketball fan would be hard-pressed to find a better game this season than the three overtime thriller between Division II nationally ranked teams Clark Atlanta and Morehouse Thursday at L.S. Epps Gymnasium. Morehouse senior guard Tyrese Walker hit a pair of game-winning free throws with 8.3 seconds left in the third overtime to give the number 11 Morehouse a 97-96 victory over number 16 Clark Atlanta in the Atlanta University Center Showdown. I have been a part, and this is what somebody's saying. I have been a part of a lot of these games, said Morehouse head coach Grady Brewer, in his 18th season at school. This one is probably number one. There were two monsters out there tonight, and we just fed one more crumb, and we just got fed one more crumb of bread. So that's what he's saying. The stage was set more than 2 hours before tip-off. The line of fans to enter the gym stretched more than a block and a half. Some said they lined up at 4 p.m. for the 7:30 tip. That only foreshadowed the epic showdown of schools located within spitting distance of each other. Yeah, they real. If you ain't ever seen it, they real close. Inside the gym, it was standing room only for the reported attendance of 1,700. A DJ was spinning records up in the corner of the bleachers while the Clark Atlanta Pep Band was making sure it was impossible for fans to have a conversation with one another. And once the game started, the fans made sure the noise level only increased. It was funny. I was telling the guys right before the game started that 38 years ago I was playing in this gym and I hit the free throw just as Tyrese Walker did in the same exact basket to win the game, Brewer said. It's eerie and strange how similar the game felt. Now that's tight. I ain't gonna lie, I'm getting chills reading that. Morehouse is 21-1, 15-1 on the season in the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference. They jumped out to a 26-9 lead midway through the first half with a barrage of three-pointers. The game's intensity picked up later in the game with Clark Atlanta's Shelvin Henry Jr. and Morehouse's Walker had to be separated from a scuffle that brought the fans and bleachers to their feet. So they was at the basketball fight. So, I mean, they was at the rubbing chest, basically. The Panthers, which is Clark Atlanta, they're 20-3 and 14-2 in the SIAC. They crawled back into the contest using a combination of three-pointers and free throws that entered halftime only down. So they entered halftime only down 35-42. Morehouse pushed its lead to 11 in the second half before Clark Atlanta made its final run. Henry hit a contested layup to give the game its first tie with just over 3 minutes left in regulation. No one could break the 68-all tie sending the game into overtime, much to the excitement of the crowd, which was literally inches away from spilling over onto the court. Security guards were spread out across the floor, making sure no one interfered with the game. It was a great game, second-year Clark Atlanta head coach Darryl Walker said. This was the place to be tonight. The crowd was into it. The players were fired up. It was just a good atmosphere to compete in. The Panthers went ahead by two after senior Anthony Williams hit two free throws with 14 seconds left. Maroon Tiger sophomore Michael Olmert responded on the ensuing possession with a reverse layup to tie the game at 80 and force a double overtime. Olmert converted a three-point play with 34 seconds remaining in the second extra frame to put Morehouse up three. Panthers guard Mark Burton Jr. answered with a three-pointer to send the game to triple overtime tied at 88. The final overtime became a free throw shooting contest with Clark Atlanta leading 96-95. Walker went to the line to shoot with a 9.7 seconds remaining. He missed the first and the second, but he tracked down his missed shot and got fouled while collecting the loose ball. The SIAC's leading score of 26 and 27 points gave Morehouse the edge. Burton's three-point attempt fell off the right as time expired, and Maroon Tigers rushed the floor to celebrate. "This was an instant classic," Walker said. "I got to go home and digest this one with a glass of red wine," as Morehouse edges Clark Atlanta in the triple overtime thriller. And that sounds like it was funner than the mother hot dog. So I want y'all to get up off your feet, man. Let's sure everybody get up. Put your hands together for the triple overtime thriller between Morehouse and Clark Atlanta as Morehouse comes out with the victory with a 96-97 victory over Clark Atlanta. Going down and south. Oh, man, that sounded like that was fun. Hey, man, give one time for the coaches, one time for the fans, one time for everybody who just came out and made that game the thrilling classic that it was. And, you know, us here at The Fix, we love our HBCUs, and we love to give light to our HBCUs. Amen. One time for the triple overtime, one time for the triple overtime thriller. Bow chicka wow wow. All right, so on the further sports news, you know how we got to keep it rolling. So Michael Jordan donates $7 million to fund health clinics in Charlotte's at-risk areas. Let's see what the hell Michael got going on. We ain't going to draw no conclusions, but we is going to do our investigation and read up on Malcolm Jordan. Yes, I did call him Malcolm Jordan. That's what they call him in the hood when they mess his name up. Oh, Michael Jordan. So, Michael Jordan is going public with his largest philanthropic gift, donating $7 million to establish two medical clinics in troubled Charlotte communities. Jordan, the billionaire owner of the Charlotte Hornets and a North Carolina native, is making a personal gift to fund Novant Health Michael Jordan Family Clinics, according to the Charlotte Observer. The clinics, projected to open in late 2020, are designed to serve some of the city's densest areas of poverty. Michael really wanted to do something personally. He and his family in the North Carolina area, separate from the work we've done with the Hornets, S.A. Portney Jordan spokesman told the Observer. In a statement, Jordan said he hoped the clinics will help provide a brighter and healthier future for the children and families they serve. Over the years, one of the biggest criticisms of Jordan has been his neutrality on social political issues. That, though, seems to be ending. The Hall of Famer spoke up when Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling was forced out for racist comments in 2014 and again in the summer of 2016 when he condemned the killing of African Americans by police. Man, yeah, all right. Michael Jordan don't get no credit for that shit they just said. This is the Washington Post, too. So, Michael Jordan, yeah, all right. Recently, with NFL players, coaches, and owners choosing to make a statement during national anthems across the country and the NBA in the spotlight because of President Trump, an invite of the Golden State Warriors to the White House, Jordan added his voice. One of the fundamental rights this country is founded on was freedom of speech, and we have a long tradition of nonviolent peaceful protest. Those who exercise the right to peaceably exercise themselves should not be demonized or ostracized, he said in a statement. At a time of increasing divisiveness and hate in this country, we should be looking for ways to work together and support each other, not create more division. I support Commissioner Adam Silver, the NBA, its players, and all those who wish to exercise their right to free speech. In a lengthy statement given to the Undefeated on July 2016, Jordan wrote of the need to find solutions to ensure people of color receive fair and equal treatment, and that police officers who put their lives on the line every day to protect us all are respected and supported. Now, see, let me just stop right there with that. The police officers are protected and supported. It's called the cricket. It's called the cricket justice system. So this is back when Jordan got the criticism for donating to the police, which was some bullshit. Now, I'm trying not to look at this same specific situation with these clinics as we looked at Jordan in the past, because we know Jordan just in the past is playing both sides. Jordan is walking the line. Jordan is trying to make himself look good on both sides. Michael Jordan really only cares about himself at the end of the day. We know that. But I'm trying not to be like that on this situation, even though I'm not going to dismiss that from his character. So let me just say that. So let me read on. Jordan added that he was donating $1 million each to the International Association of Chiefs of Police, newly established Institute for Community Police Relations, and the NAACP League of Defense Fund. Right, so that just goes right there. So donating money to the police, to the International Association of Police, of Chiefs of Police, and the NAACP League of Defense Fund means that none of that money would directly go to help the black community. That's what that means. So it's playing both sides in a safe way. You know, you give money to the NAACP, you give money to the Urban League, you know, you give money to these black organizations that have these names that have been around for a while but haven't been doing nothing for a minute. You give money to these places and, you know, you're a hero. You're a saint. You're a philanthropist. You notice, you know, one thing I hate about the philanthropy in this city or the people who get recognized as philanthropists is, if you are a person who don't have a lot of money, but you give your time and your effort and the little money you do have to the community, you're a community activist. But if you're rich, you're a philanthropist. Ain't that a bitch? Ain't that a bitch? I'm going to read further. Jordan was vocal about the North Carolina bathroom bill that cost Charlotte the 2017 NBA All-Star game. Similarly, he did not remain silent in the face of Sterling's racist comments, saying he was completely outraged. Jordan, you've been, well, Jordan started coming out on some fuck shit. So, yeah. We are privileged to live in the world's greatest country, a country that has provided my family and me the greatest opportunities. His undefeated post said, the problems we face didn't happen overnight, and they won't be solved tomorrow, but if we work together, we can foster together, yada, 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 same old, same old, same old, same old, same old. And that's the end of the article. So basically, Jordan is opening up clinics in at-risk areas in Charlotte to help the at-risk areas in Charlotte with their health needs. Okay. It could be a good thing. It may not be. I don't know. I'm going to keep a close eye on this. My Charlotte correspondent, I will be checking in with them. We're gonna see what's up with Jordan. I work at a health clinic, a low income health clinic, and for one, if it doesn't serve people who don't have health insurance, you ain't really helping low income communities, because most people in low income communities don't have health insurance. Poor people cannot afford to be sick. So if you're poor, you're not going to be able to pay for your health care. So we're going to keep an eye on that. I just want to put that on the table, let people know that Michael Jordan is opening up health clinics. He's donating $7 million to fund health clinics in Charlotte's at-risk areas. And he is, I guess, trying to put on his philanthropy wings or a hat or suit or whatever that is. So we're going to find more information about this. We're going to keep an eye on this. But I just want to let y'all know what was going on. We know Michael Jordan been on some fuck shit in the past. And we know it's a good chance Michael Jordan could be on some fuck shit right now. But we're going to see. We got an eye on you, Mike. I wanna be like my sight. So, moving on to NBA news. I guess you could call that NBA news. The NBA trade deadline has now passed, and a lot of interesting things have happened, especially with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So let's just get into it. Let's talk about some of these trades, right? So key players not traded at the trade deadline. The trade deadline was the 9th. So key players not traded with DeAndre Jordan. He ain't traded. Kemba Walker, Tyreek Evans, Lou Williams, Damari Carroll, Julius Randle, and Derek Favors. They didn't get traded. I mean, February 8th was the trade deadline, my bad. So February 8th, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they traded Isaiah Thomas in the package to the Lakers. And the Cavaliers got Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance. The Lakers got Isaiah Thomas, Channing Frye, and a 2018 first-round pick that the Cavaliers owned. Rodney Hood and George Hill were traded to the Cavaliers. So, like I said, Rodney Hood and George Hill went to the Cavs. The Jazz got Jay Crowder and Derrick Rose. And the Kings got Joe Johnson, Iman Shumpert, and a 2020 second-round pick. Who else? Oh, yeah, so that means Joe Johnson and Iman Shumpert finna go over there and play with Zach Randolph and De'Aaron Fox. I ain't know Joe Johnson was still in the league. I keep forgetting he's still in the league. So the Cavs also traded away Dwayne Wade. So the Heat got Dwayne Wade, and the Cavs got a likely protected future second-round pick. Elfrid Payton was traded to the Suns. From the Magic, and the Magic got a 2008 second-round pick. Emmanuel Mudiay was traded to the Knicks, and the Nuggets got Devin Harris, the Clippers' 2018 second-round pick via the Knicks, and the Mavericks got Doug McDermott and the Nuggets' second-round pick. Dante Cunningham was traded to the Nets, and the Pelicans got Rashad Vaughn. The Blazers got under the luxury tax. The Bulls got in this trade between the Bulls and the Blazers. The Bulls got Noah Vonleh and some cash, and the Blazers got the right to Mirkoen Rakovic. Okay, them Europeans out there. The Wizards saved luxury tax room, so the Hawks got from the Wizards Sheldon Mack, and the Wizards got a future second round pick that will never convey. Okay. The Kings and the Raptors exchanged prospects. And so the Raptors got Malachi Richardson, and the Kings got Bruno Caboclo. Yeah. Luke Babbitt traded back to the Heat. So Luke Babbitt went back to the Heat along with Dwayne Wade from the Hawks, and the Hawks got Okoro White. Pistons acquired James Ennis from the Grizzlies. And the Grizzlies get Bryce Johnson and future second-round pick. The Bulls traded Jameer Nelson to the Pistons. I didn't know Jameer Nelson. I keep forgetting Jameer Nelson was in the league. Damn, Jameer Nelson. Jameer Nelson, oh. But the Pistons, they got Jameer Nelson in the future second-round pick, while the Bulls got Willie Reed in the future second-round pick. All right. So before that, on February 7th, the Knicks traded Willie Hernan Gomez to the Hornets, and the Knicks got Johnny O'Brien, a 2020 second-round pick, and a 2021 second-round pick. February 5th, the Nets got Tyler Zeller. Well, the Knicks sent Tyler Zeller to the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Nets got Rashad Vaughn in the 2018 second-round pick. On February 1st, the Bulls traded Nikola Mirotic to the Pelicans. And the Bulls got Tony Allen, Amir Asik, Jameer Nelson, and 2018 first-round pick, and the 2021 second-round pick. And the Pelicans got Nikola Mirotic and the 2018 second-round pick. And, you know, I talked about Blake Griffin going to the Pistons. So those are the trades that happened lately in the NBA, or this past trade deadline on February 9th, 8th or 9th in the NBA. So, yeah, February 8th in the NBA. So those are the picks. So let's talk about the big thing that they were talking of. The biggest news out of this is the Cleveland Cavaliers basically redid their roster, right? So you get rid of Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, who else? Let me see. All right, so You get rid of Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Dwayne Wade, Iman Shumpert, Derrick Rose. And if somebody else, it was, let me see, Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, Jay Crowder, Iman Shumpert, Derrick Rose. And I want to say somebody else. I feel like I'm leaving out somebody else. But nevertheless, those are the players that the Cavs get rid of. So the Cavs acquire Rodney Hood, Larry Nance Jr., George Hill, and Jordan Clarkson, right? And so the new look Cavaliers are at their guards, J.R. Smith, Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, Jose Calderon, Kyle Korver, and Rodney Hood. Their forwards are LeBron James, Kevin Love, Larry Nance Jr., Jeff Green, and Cedi Osman. And their centers are Tristan Thompson and Ante Zizek. So the NBA analysts are saying that this team is a much better team than it was with the previous regime. I really can't speak too much on the new additions like Rodney Hood and Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. I don't really know about those guys that much. I know about George Hill, and I know George Hill is a baller, and I know George Hill is a vast improvement at the point guard position from Isaiah Thomas and Derrick Rose. I probably would have kept Dwayne Wade from the Cavs. I ain't going to lie. I probably would have kept Dwayne Wade because Dwayne Wade was doing a pretty good job with that second unit. We're going to see what the Cavs do, man. We're going to see what they do. Everybody's saying that this is a better team defensively. It's a younger team. It's a more athletic team. They're saying Rodney Hood is a person who's able to create his own shots. We know George Hill can create his own shots. So Larry Nance Jr., I don't know much about him, so I have to learn more about him. And Jordan Clarkson, I have to learn more about him as well. So Rodney Hood he's a baller, apparently. They say he got skill. We know he was in the playoffs last year with the Utah Jazz. So he has some playoff experience. George Hill has playoff experience with the Spurs. So Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance Jr. are the ones who are the question marks, especially in my book. So we're going to see what the new look Cavs look like and do. I understand Isaiah Thomas just wasn't good on defense. Now, Isaiah Thomas just not healthy. He's getting back there, but he's not healthy. So he was a real liability on the defensive end. Jay Crowder, I have no idea what happened with him. I have no idea what happened with a lot of the picks that came in, but it shouldn't have worked out that way. Now, you see Jeff Green, they kept Jeff Green because Jeff Green, everybody knows Jeff Green, the baller. Jeff Green came over with Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder from Boston. But besides Isaiah losing his damn mind, I don't know what happened. Players just decide not to give any effort. And as a player, when you decide not to give no effort, man, you're going to lose. So, because the Cavs have been wishy-washy, they start off on a little losing streak, and they won like 17, 18 in a row. Then they went on these new, on this brand new losing streak, and just looked horrible. And it looked as if they would not even be able to compete in the East. And that's bad because the East in a difficult league to compete in. Matter of fact, if you're coming out of the East, the conference, the question is, are you going to basically, who's going to be the team that's going to lose to the Warriors? That's who the Eastern Conference team has been looking like this year. Who's going to be the team to come out and lose to the Warriors? Because right now, it don't seem like any team in the East has the cachet, the juice, the players, the superstar, the power, or anything to be able to compete with the Warriors in the East. Now, this newly constructed Cavs team seems to be in a better position to compete with the Warriors, but not necessarily win, especially as of now. Well, the team's first objective is to make to get a good position in the playoffs. We know they're going to make the playoffs, but have a good position in the playoffs and win a playoff series, right? Win a couple series, right? You win a couple series, you make it to the finals. Now, Kevin Love will be out, like I told you last week. Kevin Love out 8 weeks. It's been a week, so Kevin Love got 7 more weeks out. So over the next 7 weeks, the Cavs will be gelling with the current team that they have now. And then with Kevin Love come back, you got to gel again. So it's this whole season will be about the Cleveland Cavaliers reincorporating players into their system, because they had to do that in the beginning of the year with D-Wade and Isaiah Thomas and everybody. Well, not Isaiah in the beginning, but D-Wade and Jay Crowder and everybody. And then with Isaiah coming back, and then the trades with the new players, that Kevin Love being hurt, and then now the new-look Cavs of what we have today, and then in 7 weeks with Kevin Love come back. So we're going to see how well the Cavaliers are able to adjust their rosters, adjust the style of play to actually be able to compete at a high level as the premier team in the Eastern Conference, and at least give the Warriors, some competition in the finals. Last thing we want to see in the NBA Finals is a team get their ass straight dusted off the court. So I'm guessing this is what made the Cavs make the moves that they made, because I hear a lot of people still saying that the Toronto Raptors or the Boston Celtics are in a better position than the Cavs to be able to come out of the East, and I just don't see it. I just don't see the Celtics or the Raptors really dropping their nuts this year, really saying, you know what, we are going to be the big dogs in the East. We are going to be the big dogs in the West. And it could just be me with my nostalgia, but I don't believe it. Seeing is believing. I have to see these teams step it up, because right now, aren't they doing the same things they were doing last year? I have to go back to check Toronto's record. But Boston was damn sure number one in the East last year, a team led by Isaiah Thomas. Right? Boston pretty much played the same way last year that they are this year. The difference is Kyrie Irving and Isaiah Thomas. Boston has a more of a commitment to defense this year. But we know when it comes to getting to the finals and beating LeBron-led teams, you got to come with it. And will either these teams, the Celtics or the Raptors, be able to truly beat a LeBron-led team in a 7-game series? I don't believe so. I truly don't believe so. Time will tell, and we will see what's going on. So, I don't know. I'm not going to sound really happy. I don't really have a real basketball team. You know, growing up, I used to watch the Bulls because Jordan was playing. So, you know, but I don't have a real basketball team. If I was to root for one, I root for the Bulls, just because I try not to be a bandwagon motherfucker. So, yeah, man, but that's what's going on in the NBA, man, with the trades and the Cavs. And I hope that the Cavs situations turn out good and, you know, they make it back to the finals. So we're going to see what goes on with Kyrie and you know, we'll see what happens. All right, so I want to move on. As I told you, I want to give you more information about the fallout from Jemele Hill leaving SportsCenter. So it seems like when SportsCenter, when ESPN brought Jemele, like I was saying last week, when they brought Jemele and Michael over, they wanted them to not do that black shit, not be so black, not be so hood, not be so down, so urban, so cool. They wanted them to tone that down and be more white friendly, because SportsCenter is the platform where the white people really tune in, right? The 6 o'clock SportsCenter. So all the fallout led to Jemele Hill leaving SportsCenter and becoming a writer at the Undefeated, right? And Michael Smith is still a SportsCenter anchor for now. So let's read this article from Yahoo Sports, right? Michael Smith is still a SportsCenter host for now. The ESPN personality may not last much longer in that role after he blasted the company for its mishandling of the program. Because ESPN fucked up. Because ESPN took that show that had what it had with the chemistry between Michael and Jemele and tried to fuck all that up. You wanted them to do what they were doing on His and Hers on SportsCenter, but not really do what they were doing on His and Hers on SportsCenter. Specifically, Smith is upset about ESPN trying to alter how he and former co-anchor Jemele Hill believe their vision of SportsCenter should run. So they asked them for their vision, accepted their vision, but then tried to change their vision. That's what white people do. Smith appeared on James Andrew Miller's podcast and did not hold back when asked about the show. And so everything I'm about to read is what Michael Smith said on the James Andrew Miller's podcast. And hell, maybe I need to get Michael Smith here on The Fix so we could talk about this. So there was a time when we weren't talking to each other on air anymore, Smith said. Like, no more. And Jemele, not less, not here, not there. No more Michael and Jemele talking. No more of their commentary. Just strictly live shots and analysts and analysis. That's what pissed me off so much. I'm like, so wait a second. You all acknowledge that one of the strengths that we were going for us as a show is Michael and Jemele's chemistry, but Michael and Jemele don't fucking talk to each other? How does that make sense? Right, so they altered the show because they didn't want that black shit on their show. They wanted y'all black faces. They wanted the acceptable black culture to bring in the white people who like acceptable black culture, the black people who like acceptable black culture, but not the real black people. So they wanted y'all to leave that real black shit over at His and Hers, right? James Andrew Miller wrote, "Those guys have all the fun," which gave an inside look at the triumphs and scandals at ESPN. Smith later explained that he and Hill knew they would be pushed back to the way they want to do things, but said the two did not fight. They backed down, and ESPN got what they wanted, according to Smith, which was Michael and Jemele being muted. He added that it frustrated the fuck out of us. So they didn't fight. So Michael is saying that he and Jemele didn't fight back. They just went along with what ESPN was saying, and ESPN fucked everything up. Hill asked to leave the program in January to join ESPN's The Undefeated during her time in sports and a co-anchor. Hill got in hot water with the company over the Donald Trump tweets and calling out the white supremacy and all that shit up, especially talking about Jerry Jones and the ESPN crackers who run ESPN, who friends with Trump and Jerry Jones and all the other racist crackers didn't like that, and they had to find a way to protect their friendship and not expose their white supremacist ways and alliances. So, you know, Jemele got suspended, and she came back, and it just wasn't the same no more. So ESPN fucked up. Will they admit that they fucked up? No. They won't. The ESPN fucked up. Always fucking up. Right? Cracker shit. Real cracker shit. But you know me, like I've been saying, they both are ultra talented. Start your own. Y'all can either come do y'all show right here on the Freedom Train Network. But start your own. But when you go play in somebody else's sandbox, can't get mad at their rules, especially when you don't have your own sandbox to play in. Right? When you don't have your own sandbox to play in, you can't get mad at somebody else's rules. I said it last week. I talked about this last week before I learned about this, because this news, this article about what Michael Smith is saying came out like early to midweek last week. But I talked about this last week on last week's show when I talked about Jamel Hill leaving SportsCenter for the undefeated. These white folk, man, they don't care about black folk really being able to uplift and empower and really have those positive images, that positive dialogue, that great dialogue, that great chemistry. White folk don't care about that. White folk just care about that bottom line, which is that dollar. So black folk got to understand that if we really want to do it and do it our way and do it right, we got to do it on our own. We got to do it by ourselves. You can't tell me that we can't, because we can't. We got the money. We got the capital. We got the resources. We have everything we need except the unity and the dignity, the strength, the belief in self, the self-esteem. Our individual and collective self-esteem is in the trash. That's why we don't believe in ourselves. We don't believe in each other as a. We don't believe in ourselves as individuals. We don't believe in ourselves as a collective. That's why we still allow white people to control and run everything. And then, not to mention the sellouts, the coons who will go above and beyond to make sure that they help to sabotage what the black people are building. But that was Michael Smith going off about what was going on sports. And I mean, could you blame him, though? Could you really blame him? I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's real crazy what's going on, but that's why you need to have your own, man. I thought it would last longer than what it is, but I knew they weren't going to be able to fully do what they did. Excuse me. I knew they wasn't fully going to be able to do what they've been doing on his and hers, but I didn't know his team was going to fuck it up like this. Like I said last year, what a difference a year makes. What a difference a year makes. So I'm going to keep an eye on this as well, keep y'all informed, up to date on what's going on with Michael Smith and Jamel Hill, and see if Michael Smith stays with the SportsCenter brand or goes back to some other things. We'll see. I keep y'all in the loop, and if anything changes, you know damn well I'm going to talk about it. All right. So, something else happened this past week. Annually, it always happens. It's the National Signing Day, and it's where the top high school football players pick and choose which colleges they will be playing at. This signing day was just as much as a spectacle as those in the past, even though signing day today is more of a spectacle than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. 10 years ago, signing day was just a blip on the radar. Now signing day is fucking tomfoolery and all its wonder. But I still say, if we had more of these top players going to HBCUs, things would change. The whole game would change. But the HBCUs have to step their game up too. So the community got to step their game up, and the HBCUs got to step their game up. But National Signing Day happened. A lot of theatrics happened. One of the things that happened during Signing Day was the receiver for he signed with the University of Florida. I think his name was Jacoby Caldwell. But he chose to go to the University of Florida. His mother had on like a Tennessee hat and an Alabama shirt. And he chose to go to Florida. His mother got up and walked away from the set. And you know, he was acting like he was crying and upset and all these things here. But I was going, a lot of people was talking bad about the lady. But then the stories came out that it was all that was planned. All that was planned. Her walking away and all the theatrics, all the fake crying and all that was planned. He said That's his mama, that's the personality, that's joking and all this thing. These are the things that the player is saying, that the mother, in defense of the mother, so trying to say the mother isn't really crazy like that. All that was planned. Okay, cool. I hope your ass is good. Hope your stars translate to the collegiate field. Because now there's one thing too. There's a lot of these people have to be able to have their minds right because your college, your football career is over. If you didn't get picked, you got to get on your grind to get to these schools. But you know, nevertheless, a whole bunch of black talent going to these white schools. So the University of Georgia had the top recruiting class. Alabama had the seventh. Wow, Alabama falls out of the top five. Alabama and Florida State and Florida fall out of the top five. So Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, USC, Penn State, Clemson, Alabama, Miami, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Florida State, Auburn, Washington, Florida, and LSU round out the top 15. Oregon is 16. Texas A&M 17, UCLA 18, South Carolina 19, Tennessee 20, Michigan 21, Nebraska 22, North Carolina 23, Virginia Tech 24, TCU 25, NC State 26, Mississippi State 27, Maryland 28, Louisville 29, Baylor 30, Ole Miss 31, Michigan State 32, Oklahoma State 33, and yada, 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 yada. So these are all the schools that are have acquired the black talent and will go out and make these green dollars and none of that money go back to the black community. Unless they are some spook behind the doors in these classes, spooks who sat behind the doors. And if you got some spooks who sat behind the doors in these classes, hey, man, go out there, get what you need to get and bring it back. But if you're not one of those people, if you just... Man, I'm just trying to make it, dog. I just want to play football, dog. And you don't get it. You're a mercenary for one that's about to make millions of dollars off of you, and you're going to get the short end of the stick. And if you try to make money off yourself, you're going to be punished because you're a bad person, even though all these white folks are making millions of dollars off of you. National Signing Day used to be exciting as shit to me. Now, it's such a fucking sad day. See how the parents, the black parents, line their kids up to go be a part of these white institutions who only care about them because of what they can do for the white institutions. If these kids could not play ball, nobody would give a shit about them or the parents. Right? So, and that's something I was going to say to that mom, like, you know, if your son can't play football, none of these coaches will acknowledge your presence. So, for one, that needs to be understood. They're only acknowledging your presence because of what your son can do. So, I mean, when it comes to sending our kids to college, when it comes to this National Signing Day and the spectacles that we make of National Signing Day and the roots we take and just the mindsets we create, the atmospheres that are created, like, everything is about sending our kids off to these white folk so these white folk can exploit our kids because we have yet to put our heads together to learn how we can benefit off of our own. But these white folk been put their head together. They've been have these think tanks going to see how they can benefit off of us. We need to do different, man. We really do, but y'all hear me talking about this all the time. These black parents offering their black kids up to these white institutions for this green money that the black communities and the black parents don't necessarily benefit from because the white corporations and the white companies and the white schools are getting way more off these players than they're giving. So I give you $100,000 to be a part of what I got going on while I make billions off of you. I make 10, 30, 40 big, 40 million, 100 million, 200 million, 1 billion. I give you your 30,000. Give you 140,000. Whatever, man. You can Our players get small fractions of what they're actually worth. Our communities aren't getting nothing of what these players are worth, except the occasional, you know, football camp. Get you a football camp going and you in there. Man, please. A lot of people got signed yesterday. A lot of people went to college. A lot of people signed to go to college. A lot of black people. But what we don't see a lot of is the black community improving. So we need to work on that. We need to work on that. We need to work on that. It is our issue. So let's get our goddamn minds right. Stop offering our kids up to these white folk who have no real interest in them outside of what they can do. And wake up and find one of the kids in some Jerry Sandusky shit. Keep offering them up. All right. So let's move on. Bill Belichick, Super Bowl, Malcolm Butler, Patriots, and the Eagles. What the hell is going on between the sheets and the wings? So, the Patriots cornerback, Malcolm Butler, was set on the bench during Super Bowl 52, and Bill Belichick is saying that Malcolm Butler was set during the Super Bowl because of matchup issues. Now, Malcolm Butler was clearly their best defensive back. So I don't understand. This is a Instagram post from Michael David Smith. It's saying Belichick says he benched Butler for football reasons. So let's say Butler graded out poorly versus Jaguars. And there were things on Eagles film that made Bill think other DBs would match up fine. But at some point during the game, why didn't they realize he made a mistake? Like, and that Instagram post to me stands out because if you watch the Super Bowl, Nick Foles had 379 passing yards. Nick Foles caught a touchdown pass. Like, Alshon Jeffrey was slowed down in the second half. But Nelson Aguilar got off, like that one DB that was following, and they were like sneak double teaming Alshon Jeffries too. So let's not act like they wasn't. They were like sneak double teaming him. So, but Bill Belichick messed up. The Patriots defense messed up. The personnel that they had on the field was not the best personnel, and we all believe that Malcolm Butler would have made a great difference in the Super Bowl that would have been able to help the Patriots get a victory. The Patriots couldn't get a stop. I think the Eagles had like they converted on like 12 third downs and at least 2 fourth downs. Right? So I mean Bill Belichick fucked up. Bill Belichick outsmarted himself. Bill Belichick trying to do what he normally does, and it didn't work out. He messed up. It hurt him. It really hurt him, and he lost the Super Bowl, and they're maintaining that they made the best moves, that Malcolm Butler just shouldn't have been playing. And Malcolm Butler's basically saying that they gave up on him. And they probably did, so Malcolm Butler probably will not be a Patriot after this year. And there's a lot of turmoil in the Patriots locker room between Belichick, Brady, and Kraft. And they're all not being on the same page, especially with the defensive moves now from the Super Bowl, because the Patriots' offense came out to play. The Patriots' offense came to play. Josh McDaniels had the offense firing, clicking on all cylinders. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to get on Josh McDaniels' ass. But the Patriots' defense did not show up. So Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, they got some explaining to do, and they've been trying to explain it, and they've been trying to have it. And people been asking, like, how the hell do you don't play your best defensive back? Like, how you don't do that? How you don't play your best defensive back in the Super Bowl where you can clearly see that the defensive people that you have, like Patrick Chung and Devin McCourty, could not cover Nelson Aguilar or any other of the slot receivers at all. They were struggling with that. Patrick Chung got hurt like 3 times. Devin McCourty got hurt at least once. They could not keep up with them slot receivers, but yet nothing was changed. Nobody was shifting. Like, Michael Butler didn't even enter the game other than one snap on special teams. So, I think Bill Belichick outsmarted himself on this one. He messed up where he admitted, probably won't. But I think that's the real reason why the Patriots lost the Super Bowl. The defense just could not make a stop. They couldn't make one significant stop at all. They just couldn't. And that really hurt them. The offense came to play. But it's all three phases of the game. And when you mess up on the most important phase, which is defense, you're not going to win. But Bill Belichick, we call you what? The genius that you are and the genius that you have, you fucked up on this. You thought you was the smartest on the field, and you got out-coached. Doug Peterson out-coached you. The Eagles staff out-coached you. You were out-foxed. The old wise bull was, he was done in. And hey, man. It's like that sometimes. It's like that sometimes. But be a man to own up to it. Don't be trying to act like you know you did the right thing, but you know you fucked up. So it's crazy. It's the story of the week with everybody talking about Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia losing the Super Bowl because of bad decisions. And it was bad decisions. They made horrible decisions. Personnel decisions wasn't good. The adjustments were not made, and the Eagles could not be stopped. And that's what led to Nick Foles becoming the MVP of the Super Bowl. So, yeah, man. Shit be like that. She's just like that. The Philadelphia Eagles are the Super Bowl champions. We're going to come back and talk about Philadelphia and the fallout from that Super Bowl. Right. So, moving on to further football news. Further football news, Jimmy G get paid. Jimmy G got paid. Remember a couple of shows ago I read to you all the statistics that Jimmy Garoppolo ended the 2017 season on. And his stats were comparable to Colin Kaepernick's, or should we say Colin Kaepernick's stats were comparable to his. Colin Kaepernick was cut and he hasn't gotten a job since. Jimmy Garoppolo agrees to a record five-year, $137.5 million contract after his stats being comparable to Kaepernick, even though Kaepernick got blackballed because of his political stance, his social stance. So the San Francisco 49ers have locked down their franchise quarterback as Jimmy Garoppolo has officially signed a new 5-year contract worth a reported $137.5 million per Adam Schefter, the ESPN analyst. Mike Garofalo of NFL Network first reported the new deal. Garofalo said it's the biggest deal in NFL history on an average per year basis. Maiococo of NBC Sports Bay Area reported the deal includes a total of $74 million in guaranteed money. Garoppolo posted on Instagram shortly after the post emerged. Some posted him, you know, growling and yelling and stuff. So Garoppolo spent the first 3.5 seasons of his career with the New England Patriots, making just 2 starts while primarily serving as the backup to Tom Brady. Despite the limited playing time, the 49ers pulled the trigger on the trade shortly before the trade deadline in exchange for a second-round pick. After an outstanding showing once he became a regular on the field, General Manager John Lynch made it clear that this is the long-term answer at quarterback. So Garoppolo still has maybe 6 to 8 games under his belt, and he got that $137.5 million deal. Wow, I wouldn't have gave it to him, but okay. This is what they're saying from the 49ers camp. When you find that right guy at that position, it's really good for your franchise. We believe we found the right guy. Now the challenge is getting Jimmy signed. We're working hard towards that. We'll see. I think he wants to be with us, and we want him here. I think it makes too much sense not to happen. So it's just a matter of getting it done. This is from this 49ers camp. The two sides were able to come to an agreement to keep the 26-year-old in San Francisco for the foreseeable future. So they're just going to try to keep him there for the next 10 years from 26 to 36. So Garoppolo has already proved that he has what it takes to lead the team to success, even though he did the same thing Colin Kaepernick did. Turning around what was one of the worst teams in the NFL with a 5-0 record as a starter after the 49ers went 1-10 to start the year. His 1,250 passing yards and his first four starts for his team are the most in NFL history, according to David Lombardi of The Athletic, which was just a bit more than what Kaepernick had. The Eastern Illinois product finished with 1,560 passing yards and 7 touchdowns in 6 games with a 96.2 quarterback rating, which ranked 11th among passers who attempted at least 177 passes, which was not much more than what Kaepernick did. And I'm going to keep saying that. While he remains relatively inexperienced for someone drafted in 2014, San Francisco has faith in his ability to lead the team back to contention after 4 years without a playoff appearance. The organization surrounds him with an improved offensive line and more weapons. Garoppolo has a chance to be one of the top quarterbacks in the game. And if he doesn't get the team to the NFC Championship game twice, he ain't shit and he ain't worth that money, because that's what Kaepernick did. Kaepernick got his team to the NFC Championship game twice. Twice. But got cut and blackballed because he took a social and political stance to bring attention to injustices that black people are facing daily in the streets at the hands of the police and the police brutality and harassment. But Jimmy Garoppolo, all he does is go out and do basically the same thing Kaepernick did, and he's now getting all this money and the NFL and everybody all on his dick. You know we're going to keep an eye on this one. You know we're going to keep an eye on this one. Jimmy G, I don't wish nothing bad on you, but all I'm saying is if you don't ball, we're going to let your ass have it. 49ers, if he don't ball, we're letting y'all have it. John Lynch, if he don't ball, we're letting you have it, John. That's all I'm saying. Because what y'all are doing is straight bullshit. Especially when we think about context in which Kaepernick is being fucked over. All right, so after the Super Bowl, right, after the Super Bowl, guess what happened? Guess what white people did? Rioted, as they always do. White people riot after the Super Bowl, it's not a big deal. Black people have a peaceful protest after one of the members of our community is gunned down unlawfully and unjustly by a police officer or a member of the white race or any other race, and we are called thugs, criminals. We're nationally ostracized. We're nationally stigmatized from the president's office on down. But when white people riot after they win Super Bowls and literally destroy property within the city, it's just kids being kids. It's just, you know, white kids having fun. It's a straight bullshit, and that lets you know we live in a fucked up system, and these white people don't give a shit about us. And all these white media outlets are designed to spread negative propaganda against black people. So that's why our network, the Freedom Trade Network, is designed to spread positive propaganda and positive messages and stories about black people. This is from the Washington Post. Let me get my shit right. Fires in the streets, smashed windows, flipped cars, light poles toppled by alcohol-fueled crowds. Philadelphia awoke this morning after the triumph of Super Bowl Sunday to a city in disarray after its vexing question. What is it about sports that makes fans riot? Why do fans care so intensely about their teams? What is going on in their brains after a win or a loss? What circumstances make a riot more likely? Psychologists and sociologists have studied the phenomenon of sports fan violence and have found some interesting answers. Researchers attribute violent behavior to a heady mixture of factors. Intense fan identification, crackership with the team, behavior changes when people become part of a mob, more crackership, and strong physiological and psychological responses when your team wins or loses. Crackers not being able to control their emotions. White people understanding their white privilege. White people understanding their lack of controlling emotions. And mixing all that together with alcohol means riot. When do fans often tend to riot? Sports fan violence occurs all over the world, but the American fan is unusual in a few ways. Unlike European soccer hooligans, in which fans of opposing teams often hurt each other, fan rioting in the United States is usually limited to vandalism or violence directed at inanimate objects, notes Jerry Lewis, a Kent State University sociologist who has spent decades studying fan violence. American fan riots typically occur after championships or high-stake playoff games, said Lewis, who has collected statistics from sports riots in the 1960s and 1970s. And when American sports fans riot, it is almost always in celebration of a victory rather than a defeat. Why do fans feel so strongly about their teams? We're social creatures. We have a need to belong, said Daniel Wan, a sociology professor at Murray State University. People often split themselves into categories based on occupation, ethnicity, gender, and other factors. Unlike race or gender, over which people have no choice, sports fandom is like a religion. It's self-selected, but also strongly influenced by the environment, including family and other people with whom you grow up. So basically, they're trying to make excuses for why white people don't have no fucking self-control. White people crazy as hell. Those sports fans are just barbaric, crazy-ass, drug-fueled, alcohol-fueled hooligans who have no kind of respect or even control for themselves or the environment. They don't give a shit about what goes on, and their whole plan is to destroy everything within their wake. That's what white people have been doing since the beginning. And we're not taking no excuses for that. There's no excuses for these white people destroying, flipping cars, toppling light poles, setting shit on fire in the whole city after you win the game. You've won the game, crackers. You've won the game. What are you rioting for? Why? Because you are barbarians, you are Vikings, you are bloodthirsty hooligans, vampires who have not learned to control yourselves. Your lack of pigmentation is also an indication of your lack of environmental care, your lack of humanity, your lack of anything that real humans carry. White people, particularly white drunken sports fans, are some of the most dangerous motherfuckers on this earth, and they asses need to be locked up in the zoo and fucking contained. They are some of what's wrong in this goddamn country, and white people, white media, white news only makes excuses for these white fucktards to go out and do this fucking retarded cracker shit that they do on a regular basis as many times out of the year as they do it. But when black people peacefully protest, we are the problem. That lets you know that white people are only fucking with white people and staying on cold, and we have to do the same thing, black people. But no, black people have to always side with white people. White people are crazy. After sporting events, I get my black ass home. I do not get caught up in white people's mayhem and all the different things that they have going on, because they're not going to try to kill me out there. Yeah, they out there trying to kill themselves. You think they won't try to kill me? Come on, man. These white folks see a car and flip it. These white folks see a window and smash it. See a lamp pole and knock it down. See people and try to hurt them. See things going on and try to damage them all on the fan, shit, I can't even get it out. All because of the extra energy and emotion that they're feeling because somebody won a motherfucking football game or a sporting contest of any sort of type or kind. Y'all white people are full of shit, and y'all need y'all ass whooped. Y'all need to be arrested, sterilized, quarantined, whatever, because that is unacceptable behavior for you to be out in the streets in the public acting like that. And they always make excuses for white people out there being like that in the streets, which is unacceptable. And that stuff needs to stop. White people are what's wrong. Those type of white people are really what's wrong with this earth. Those type of white people are why the earth is sick. Those type of white people are why societies go bad. Because they make excuses for the mayhem that happens. White people can do dumb shit and it's okay. But nobody else can. Because it's just white people just having fun. Just having fun. White people need to be sterilized if that's how you're going to act after sporting events, whether win or lose. Y'all asses, all y'all need to be sterilized if that's how you're going to act after sporting events. That's some crazy shit. And only crazy motherfuckers would even try to justify that shit. But you can't make a peaceful protest against white supremacy or against unjust killings. But you can be violent and riot after your team win the motherfucking sporting contest. Okay. Okay. All right, white people. Whatever you say, white people. Sure. Sure. It's okay. It's okay. We're only white. It's okay. We're white, so we can do this. We can do these things because we're white. You know, white people have the right to tear up people's shit. Other people don't. White people do. White people have the right to tear up everybody's shit. Fuck out of here, man. Fuck out of here. All that. That's why it's important to have your own media outlets to tell the truth and tell the stories the way they need to be told. Because white people get a pass. White people are pacified. They get pat on the back, slaps on the wrist for the dumb shit that they do. But they want everybody else to be accountable. Just the same way how they want professional athletes to be held to a higher standard than the fucking president. And you know what? You black people who talk about, I don't respect the president, but I respect the office. Y'all full of shit. Why? Black Americans do not have to respect shit about American government or politics. We do not have to respect the office of the president. I don't give a shit who is the president, whether it's Barack Obama, whether it's Michelle, whether it's Trump, Hillary, Bernie Sanders, Bill Clinton, whoever, George Bush. We do not have to respect the office or the seat or the position of the president of the United States. The president of the United States, whoever it is, can kiss my motherfucking ass. Because the president of the United States has always been a proponent of white supremacy and has never helped, has never worked to help black America get better. Have only worked against black America. So black people, stop falling for that shit. Let people tell you that you got to respect the office of the president. You ain't got to respect shit. Fuck the president. I said it. Now, that ain't even my weekly rant. That's my weekly rant warm up. My weekly rant is aimed at old bitch ass Josh McDaniels because it is confirmed that Josh McDaniels is still a fuckboy. Now, Josh McDaniels is the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator for New England Patriots, and he has a history of fucking shit up and fucking people over and not living up to his word. Josh McDaniels will lie to you in your face while stabbing you in your back. He's not only is he in our weekly rant, but Josh McDaniels gets the Fuckboy of the Week award. So let me read this article. As the Philadelphia Eagles were upsetting the New England Patriots on the field, social media was alive with speculation on the future of Josh Fuckboy McDaniels. The Patriots offensive coordinator had agreed to become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts at their second meeting in Massachusetts during the Super Bowl bye week. So he met with the people twice. He had several conversations with the Colts organization. But at the last minute, before it's time for him to sign the contract and they announced that he would be the next coach of the Indianapolis Colts, which was a fucking bad move. So whoever that GM was needed to be fired, because why would you go after Josh McDaniels? But nevertheless, Josh McDaniels pulled out and backed out on this. And you know what? Never mind. I still want to be a coach with the New England Patriots. And it's like, hold up, bitch. Hold up, bitch. You just told us you're going to be our coach. Hold up, bitch. So it's crazy because three other assistants they basically quit their jobs to go work in Indianapolis with Josh McDaniels. So apparently Josh McDaniels' agent quit on his ass too. So as the Eagles coach Doug Peterson answered questions in his post-game news conference, McDaniels' agent Bob Lamonte was asked about his client's future, according to the source. Lamonte was shocked there was even a question. He's going to Indy, he said Indianapolis. I can't even get my damn word out right now. But you know what I'm saying. But the Colts were dealing with the tragedy with the death of linebacker Edwin Jackson, along with Uber driver Jeffrey Monroe was struck and killed last week. He was killed on the side of the road by a drunk driver early Sunday last week. Sunday was a hard day for the Colts general manager. I didn't watch the Super Bowl. My mind was around Edwin Jackson and his family, Jeffrey Monroe and his family. That's where my mind was. I didn't deal with the world. I deal with what's going on internally, where we're going with our international perception is. I mean, what our international perception is, making our fans understand where we're coming from. All the rumors, everybody has got an opinion or a take. Some are true, some are not. Ballard inserted that he had no indication that McDaniels might be wavering. From Monday going into Tuesday morning, on Monday, Josh McDaniels returns from Super Bowl 52 with the Patriots with a sense of finality. One of the last things on his agenda was to meet with owners Robert and Jonathan Kraft and Coach Bill Belichick. Up to this point, they hadn't discussed anything regarding McDaniels' future. McDaniels began exit interviews with the Pats on Monday, but seemed focused on his new beginning Tuesday morning when Ballard checked in with his coach and waiting. The two talked on the phone, making sure everything was on track for McDaniels' arrival in Indianapolis. They went over the agenda for a planned Wednesday news conference and the plane the Colts were sending to pick up McDaniels. McDaniels told Ballard the suit packed and was ready to go. Oh, shit. Then he backed out on him. Around 11 a.m., Ballard's calls with Coach McDaniels. Ballard ended the call with McDaniels. The coach tweeted the news that he would be their new coach, and the news conference was set for 3:30 on Wednesday. So that was what was supposed to happen. So Tuesday afternoon, things started shifting. Robert and John Kraft, as well as Ben, met with McDaniels again and made an aggressive pitch. McDaniels' conversation with Bill Belichick had particular influence, a source said. Belichick wasn't trying to talk McDaniels out of going, but he knew his offensive coordinators was having second thoughts. Belichick offered to include McDaniels on more of inner workings of the organization, from roster construction to financial salary-related considerations. That was viewed as extremely valuable, right? And so that's what the media was saying. Ownership also endorsed it as a way to extend Belichick's influence on the organization in future years, although no assurances were given to McDaniels that he would succeed Belichick. So McDaniels turned down the Colts without the guarantee of being Belichick's successor. Hell, if the Pats are smart, they wouldn't make him the Belichick's successor, because you can't trust him, right? So McDaniels said, basically got told that he would get a significant raise. And, you know, that he would possibly He got the hint that he would possibly succeed Belichick, but there's no guarantee. So basically, McDaniels backed out of the deal and stayed in New England. His three homeboys mad at him. The GM for the Colts, who was his homeboy, mad at him. His agent quit on him. And we found out that Josh Fuckboy McDaniels struck again with that bullshit that he be on. Josh McDaniels. See, if Josh McDaniels was black, Josh McDaniels wouldn't have got more than one chance. But because Josh McDaniels is a white boy with fuckboy DNA, he continues to get chances. Now, he's an excellent offensive coach and an excellent offensive coordinator and an excellent quarterback's coach. But he's also excellent at being a fuckboy. Excellent at not being good on his word. Excellent at turning his back on you. Excellent at not being trustworthy. Excellent at being a fuckboy. Did I already say excellent at being a fuckboy? If not, excellent at being a fuckboy. See, the Josh McDaniels of the world are the reason why other good people don't get a chance in certain places, because Josh McDaniels will butt it up for everybody out and act like he ain't do nothing. And that's one of the biggest issues, man. Josh McDaniels, you do not deserve another head coaching position ever again in the NFL. You did not deserve to be considered for a head coaching job. The coach GM, you stupid in the first place for even considering Josh McDaniels. I know, we all know he's an excellent offensive mind, but you can't trust the cracker. You can't, like, you his homeboy. You his homeboy. And he turned his back on you. His homeboy, the coach GM, that's his homeboy. Three other cats who was his homeboys who was leaving their job to come work with him in the Colts. He turned his back on them to say, you know what? I ain't saying nothing to none of y'all. I'm just going back. I'm going to go back to New England, and I'm going to stay put and be in New England, and hopefully I succeed Bill Belichick, which I doubt he probably will, because the Patriots know where he is. The Patriots know he's a great coordinator. Patriots know, as far as coaching, that's not where it is with him. They know they can't trust him. They know he got fuckboy in his veins. But Josh McDaniels don't probably get it, though. But how many chances do you give a fuckboy to be a fuckboy, though? That's my thing. How many chances do you give a fuckboy to be a fuckboy? And if you continue to give fuckboy chances, fuckboy's going to be fuckboy, right? But when you white and a fuckboy, you get ample amount of chances to fuck up. But when you black and you a fuckboy, you don't get no chances to fuck up. Basically, if you black, first of all, if you black, whether you're a fuckboy or not, I always say you got to work two times harder. So when you work, when you're a black person, especially a black football coach, and you're coaching within the white world, yeah, you got to coach two times harder because you got to prove yourself in the white world. Because black people have yet to build our own. But when you're white, it's built for you. So as long as you are not truly tarnishing the shield or the brand of the NFL, which we know now is an entertainment company, you're going to get these chances. Character never becomes an issue when you're white, unless you do something egregious to make the whole company look bad, the whole organization as a whole look bad. But not old Josh McDaniels, old bitch-ass Josh McDaniels, old fuckboy Josh McDaniels. Because there are so many great black football minds out that will not get the opportunities that Josh McDaniels continuously gets. Josh McDaniels is the Lane Kiffin of the NFL. You know he gonna fuck up. You know he going to fuck up. It's only a matter of time before he fuck up. Everybody knows he's going to fuck up. We just don't know when and where he going to do it, but we know he going to do it. But he keep getting opportunities to fuck up, which is amazing to me. But it's not amazing. The older I get and the more I understand about what's going on in the system of white supremacy and understanding white people living on code, being on code. Black people need to learn how to be on code. Because black people be worried about what white people are saying, just oust another black person who was in that same position as Josh McDaniels. White people say, you know what? Man, come on back over here, Indy, man. Get this money, man. Let's go back to the Super Bowl next year. You got Brady. Now, some of the things that they were saying is he was backing up because of the situation with Andrew Luck. Everybody knew Andrew Luck was going to be hurt coming into the year. Everybody know Andrew Luck ain't healthy. But you mean to tell me as a coach you're not good enough to develop the quarterbacks that you got into better players? McDaniels, so you're basically only as good as your roster, huh? You're not able to get the best out of what you have. Because that's what great coaches are able to get the best out of what they have. Now, of course, it takes great players mixed with great coaches and great concepts to create great teams to win championships. But like I said, great coaches are able to get the best out of what they have. Whether you have great players, you have good players, mediocre players, hot garbage players, the best coaches are able to get the best out of what they have. So, McDaniels, I'm questioning your coaching fucking ability. I don't think you were one of the best coaches. I think that's why your ass is still relegated to coordinator status. Now, we know you're a brilliant offensive mind, but nobody trusts you. Why should we trust you? Why should you be trusted, Josh McDaniels? Even though I still do think some dumbass, desperate-ass team, if not this year, in the near future, will give you a shot at being the coach on their team so you can turn your back on them. But you learn from the best, because Belichick, if you saw the Bill and Bill documentary that ESPN did, 30 for 30 on Bill and Bill, Belichick got a history of doing that too. Belichick got a history of, you know, telling you one thing and doing another, and getting you going one way and coming back the next. White people knowing how to play the game. Black people really sticking to the loyalty thing. Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Black people sticking to that. Not necessarily knowing how to play the game. Not understanding that these white folk don't play this loyalty thing like y'all do. Y'all go around here listening to these rap songs. Talking about we got to be loyal to each other. We got to do, man, these white folk playing the game to win. Y'all playing the game to lose. Trying to be people's friends and shit. No. That's not how it works. And it's a global thing. That's why black people still be on the bar. Until we get our shit together, until we really come to grips with how the game is truly played and really get this we are the world thing out of our head, we're going to continue to lose. Josh McDaniels, continue to fuck up and continue to get opportunities at being a coach of some sort, of somehow, in some capacity, in the National Football League. Even though motherfuckers know they can't trust him, he still get an opportunity to coach in this National Football League. Ain't that a bitch? Josh McDaniels, you a whole watcher. Whole watcher, Josh McDaniels. And you get our Fuckboy of the Week award as well as the target of my weekly rant for your fuckboy activities that you continue to just engage in, man. If being a real one was wrong, Josh McDaniels don't want to be right. I said that wrong. If being real was wrong, Josh McDaniels want to be right. Josh McDaniels ain't real. He a fuckboy. A fuckboy and a real person can't occupy the same space at the same time. It's against the laws of physics. So Josh McDaniels can't occupy the same space as a real motherfucker. So it's against the laws of physics because he ain't real. He's the Lane Kiffin of the NFL. Tell you one thing, don't do another. If you're dealing with Josh McDaniels, better get it in writing. If not, you're going to be looking like the Indianapolis Colts, like a Michael Jackson jacket with all them zips. Fucked up! That's how Josh McDaniels got them people in Indy feeling fucked up. Because they thought they had them a coach. But now they got them a nope. And you got four people all out like, man, what the fuck? Three assistant coaches like, what the fuck? One GM and owner. Like, what the fuck, man? Josh McDaniels, ho-ho-a-cha. That's you. Hey, man. Hey. Fix Sports Podcast. I had a good time. Hope y'all had a good time listening to this podcast, giving y'all the weekly fix on sports of what happened in this past week. Fuck you, Josh McDaniels. Fuck you to all y'all white people who rioted after the Super Bowl. You know, all these things. Fuck Larry Nassar. You know what? Hey, let me say this. Larry Nassar, but the Larry Nassar case, okay, a lot of other people need to go to jail. Larry Nassar was molesting people for 30 years, molesting parents, daughters, children. I'm sure some parents knew that Larry Nassar was molesting their children and helped to cover it up. If I don't start seeing a lot more people going to prison, I'm going to be tripping, and I'm going to be going off, because ain't no way, buddy, could molest people for 30 years and get away with it, just ride out like that for 30 years, and don't nobody know what's going on for 30 years. Ain't nobody say nothing in 30 years, not nothing, but it just get to touch on people and just be nasty, just be old fuck boy, just be nasty for 30 years, huh? Larry Nassar, he in prison, was rightfully so, but a whole lot of other people need to be going to prison. There's a whole lot of other people were complicit in helping Larry Nassar be a fucking child molester and a fuck boy that he is. So that's the last part of that. Hey, man, this is the Fix Sports Podcast. I'm Joseph Ward, bringing your weekly fix straight here on the Freedom Train Network. The Fix is the realest and the blackest sports show you have ever heard in your life, and I keep it real and I talk about what we need to talk about. So shout out to Morehouse and Clark Atlanta for their thrilling game. And the Olympics have started. So once I get more stories on the Olympics, you know, I'll start bringing you updates and things like that. But check us out, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can download us on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. We out here. Subscribe to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And make sure you continue to stay down and support the Freedom Train Network. Hey, from my hood to your hood, like Robin Hood, up to no good, but I'm up to good. So I'm cool. I'm your homeboy. So two fingers up in the air, splitting apart. Peace.
I call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
His heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like